Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Don't sweat the technique. Now back to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Hey, back on the Bees. 2 in the books, 1 to go, final hour of the show. Jeremy had to skip out, as he mentioned, for some Cougar hoops. We've got plenty to talk about as it still surrounds your favorite football team, the Houston Texans. So we said, why not? Blessing some more Garrett Williams being here with us in studio talking some Houston Texans football. He of blessing and stressing with the Texans. We're going to talk about the fact that Jeremy set up the question that we're all going to answer along with my man Brian McDonald. What has disappointed you the most with the Texans through 10 games? And I think for me personally, when you look at this, you know, at the start of the year, we started thinking about, well, who's going to play the other corner? Is it going to be Okuda? What are they going to do? Is Lassiter ready? Is he fast enough? They think that in pads, he's got speed. Some people thought that he slipped because he didn't. We found out that that wasn't something to be stressing about at all. We looked at the different things that we were questioning about. Is Joe Mixon washed up? Can he still run the football? The one thing that we didn't expect, that's the most disappointing thing to me, as much as I still didn't believe Kenyon Green was going to be the answer at left guard, was that this offensive line has played as bad as it's played. Because you could talk about game specifics and say they should have won this game or they slipped up in this game. To me, the overwhelming take for me that has disappointed me through 10 games is this offensive line has just not been acceptable. You've paid too much money. You've spent too many high-ranked assets on trying to make this line as good as it can be for C.J. Stroud, for the offense, for the weapons that you have, to have it fail this miserably. And yes, you can point the finger and start it with Kenyon Green. There's so much more. Howard hasn't played well. Shaq hasn't played well. Laramie's been hit or miss, but he had his stretch of penalties and the hiccups and in the tonsillitis games of the first couple games of the season, to where I was really taking note of that as well, to where this offensive line has been my massive disappointment way farther than anything else.
I mean, it's hard to argue that, so I'll just, you know, I'll agree with that and provide another option that's also up there, but I'll just expand on what you're saying. I mean, I can live with the Kenyon Green experiment. You know, he was a former first-round pick, and you have to see what we had in that. You know, he had injuries, and he wasn't healthy and all that stuff, so maybe I would like to see him, get the ripcord pulled out from underneath him a little sooner and move on from that sooner. But on the O-line, I think the biggest disappointment is Shaq Mason. He's a veteran who was like the old reliable, don't worry about him, oh, right guard solidified. He might now be our worst O lineman out of the five now that Kenyon Green is out of there and now that Scruggs is at guard and Patterson's at center. He might be the worst one. And I think they might be thinking that too. I am just concerned with that specifically as to if we will make a move if it continues to be that way. I know we signed Cam Irving back today, who was on the practice squad earlier in the year, and he's a tackle slash guard, but now he's listed as guard. And then, you know, the guy from the Bears got cut, so people are speculating Davis to get him. So I just wonder about Shaq Mason, but I agree. I mean, the O-line play has been atrocious. And you look at it this year as a pair compared to last year, you know, we all assumed just by the numbers looking at the players' names that the O-line play would be 10x better, and it's been 10x worse. It's really been a huge mystery. So that's definitely frustrating, but I would say my biggest disappointment is I really thought this team would take the next step last year. My name is Houston Stressens because the Texans play with their food every game. Majority of the games we're in, it feels like we dominate and we just refuse to put games away. Play with our food, let the opponent stick around, make every game come down to the wire, either barely win half of those or lose games we shouldn't lose. And it's been the same thing this year. I mean, just look at Sunday night. We were dominating the game against the Lions. It was our chance to finally establish ourselves as a legit contender, and no one was surprised, you know, as confident and as happy as I felt in that stadium that we would win that game. There's still in the back of your mind that shadow of a doubt that, you know, are we improved enough to really have that killer instinct and take the next step? And that's really happened all year. So I have been waiting for that moment. I don't know if, when, how, but hopefully sooner than later, we find that killer instinct to put teams away.
Brian.
Yeah, and these are kind of all connected to each other because it feels like one doesn't happen if the other one isn't. But I'm going to go to the second half struggles. I mean, we've talked about this for weeks since we first started noticing how big of a problem it was. But, I mean, they've played 10 games now, and they've only outscored their opponent in one second half, and that was against the Patriots, a bottom five team in the league. So, I mean, that kind of goes along to what you were saying, Garrett, about not putting teams away. You're up on the Packers at half. You're up 20-3 on the Bills. You're up on the Jaguars, and they take the lead, force you to have a late drive. Obviously, you're up big on you're up 7-0 on the Jets at half, and then you're up big on the Lions. And it's amazing. And part of, I think, why this is even more stressful is because we thought highly of Bobby Sloak to the point where we thought he was going to get a head coaching job this last offseason. And you're 10 weeks into the season, now going into week 11, and he still doesn't have an answer. And then he still seemingly doesn't seem to have an answer for the offensive line, although I will say in the Lions game, it did seem like they were picking up stunts and twists better than they had in previous games. But for a coaching staff that we thought to be as bright as they were, to not be able to fix the offensive line, not picking up stunts and twists, takes them 10 weeks to make the change that seemingly fixed the communication, and seemingly not being able to fix the second half woes, my confidence in the coaching staff has taken a hit for those two problems to persist as long as they did.
Yeah, I was going to say Bobby Sloak's going to have to be on this list. Somebody's going to put him on if we didn't, because of the fact that, you know, as shining, enamored, and bright as his star was a year ago, it has faded immensely because of all this. And Strouser and the way the offensive line plays. To Brian's point, they should have been already coached up in training camp on how to handle, you know, twists and all the different, you know, stunts that they're going to see as an offensive line. And the fact that we're constantly hearing the coach speak, oh, we're going to work that out in practice this week. It's not a work in progress to get better in the middle of the season, making adjustments that should have been made in the preseason to make this offensive line as good as it can be with how important it is when you're protecting C.J. Stroud. You're not protecting, you know, some lesser than quarterback that's going to be a journeyman throughout this league. And because of the expectations, Garrett, to your point earlier about where this team was after what it did a year ago and what we thought they could be, it's like I keep saying, from an anatomy and physiology, you know, point of view, everything's connected. That, you know, everything's connected to the offensive line. The neck bone's connected to the shoulder bone, connected to the, you know, to the different, the collarbone, all these things. It starts with the offensive line. If you don't have your offensive line, it doesn't matter how good CJ was a year ago. It doesn't matter how good Nico and the guys were a year ago. It doesn't matter how good your running game can be. And then the inconsistency of the fact that when your passing game has been good, your running game has been less than. When your running game has been good, your passing game has been less than. It's all because it's correlated to the offensive line.
Kind of like my golf game, you know, the driver's on, the putter's, sure, the putter's off, vice versa. Right. But I guess the question will be is, if we continue to struggle at the offensive line, do you think, how quickly would you continue to make changes? Because there's still several options out there to be made. I alluded to Shaq Mason. You know, we could find a way to shuffle another guard in there. Kendrick Green, obviously, he's not great when he played against the Jets with little practice and preparation. But, you know, he could play guard, or Cam Irving, or one of these guys off the street that we got. There's still the option that I threw out there a couple weeks ago of Blake Fisher playing tackle and Titus back at left guard and then Patterson at center. If we continue to see the offensive line struggle, how willing and how quickly would y'all want to see some of these changes to show that you're trying?
Well, from my standpoint, I don't want to see – I just think Kendrick Green shouldn't even be on the roster at this point. From what we saw and how poorly he played, I don't know how you can rationalize how he's on the roster. You had Lyle Collins in last week. Evidently, for one reason or another, whether it was his decision or theirs, they decided to move on. If Davis clears waivers getting out of Chicago – that's a guy that you definitely have to bring in, because I don't think Blake Fisher's ready to play tackle in the NFL on a consistent basis for this team this season. Now, if you want to talk about next season, I think you could have three potential changes, and you mentioned Shaq as well. But I think that Titus Howard's going to be gone because of the money. I think that Blake Fisher was already drafted to be the guy that replaces him. I think Shaq is going to be up for discussion, and I think left guard is going to be up for discussion. So I think that next season's a bigger issue, and we'll get to that when we get to it. I think for this season, everything's on the table, to your point. I just don't know if they have in-house the kind of guys that are capable. Patterson's at least holding his own, but I don't think that's good enough.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd be willing to make the change in a couple of games. I'm not
for
waiting.
Fisher?
Yeah, this year, because I mean, what do you have to lose? Like that's the point. You're already losing games. Like if it reverts back to what we were seeing, where CJ's getting sacked 8 times in a game, like he was against the Jets game, they got sacked 8 times.
Yeah.
But if it reverts back to that, what are you holding out for? You mentioned, well, you don't want to lose games. Well, if he gets sacked 8 times, what are you holding on to? It's not good enough. So go ahead and rather be – I mean, this it feels like the most desperate of moves because we know Howard's better at right tackle than he is guard. But I'd be willing to try Titus moving into right guard and then Fisher playing right tackle and see how that works. But throw anything up against the wall. I mean, other than Laremy Tunsil is your center – or left tackle, and I think Jarrett Patterson is your center rest of season – throw everything at the wall. Like, if CJ starts getting hit, that's the season. Like, if CJ gets hit and he can't get the ball off, throw everything against the wall until something sticks and fixes it.
It's kind of like what the Jets did. The Jets just went tackles across the board. They just finally said, my 5 best offensive linemen are tackles, not guards.
I believe,
but
right?
You know what they did? They held water. They were able to do what they needed to do.
Yeah.
So that's why if Davis clears, bring him in. If there's other guys that are out there, you should be looking at him. If there's some wild hair but I don't want to move the guys that are already in the positions they're supposed to be in.
Because
now you're playing musical chairs, and now the continuity's getting totally screwed up.
Yeah.
I'm focused right now on left guard. I think that you're okay at center right now. Yeah. I think left guard is the position that still kind of dictates how much of a sieve that offensive line can be. And so I would leave everybody else, assuming because, like you said, with Shaq's abilities in the past, that should be completely gone, and their knowledge of how to block should be still there, to where I'm rolling everybody I possibly can considering options at left guard.
So call me dumb, but I do have a small view of optimism with the O-line. I mean, the O-line, like the pressure rates, obviously were still like historically high. I saw the stats like from the broadcast from Next Gen, like, he's been pressured X amount of times in this game, but as bad as that was, it still looked better than what we had seen. I guess the bar was just so low, but like CJ still looked like he had the most time he's had in a while, which was kind of crazy to say. But then you couple that with the fact that Jarrett Patterson, his first game was this game at center, and you could tell there were still some errors. Obviously, the pass protection, the calling and IDing and signaling was better, but there was definitely some errors in the game. You could tell that were from being rusty, from being center, like timing of the snap count and stuff like that. The play where the Titus Howard was the double agent against our own team trying to strip the ball from
the quarterback right tackle option play.
That was a snap issue. Both tackles were beat because the ball was either snapped too late or too early. I can't remember what it was. So there's small stuff like that you can hope to continue to improve. I mean, I just think that, there's still time to get it right. So I am still slightly optimistic.
At least they're not going to block a guy like Micah Parsons this week.
That's true.
Well, that's the one guy and then because of the podcast war,
he's
going to want to make a statement on national TV. Someone better damn well block Micah Parsons on Monday night. I can tell you that. That's going to be a challenge.
But I was going to say, too, I did see on D'Amico's talk with John Harris and Mark Vandermeer, they asked him, like, what went behind the change at the O-line, and he essentially said, it was me playing our best 5. So I'd love to hear that answer. Like, I'm a big proponent of that with your O-line. Play the best 5 guys and figure it out. So if he really does have that mindset, it could go back to what we're saying. If desperate times come to desperate measures, he's going to be willing to try different stuff to get the best 5 guys.
Yeah, because it's interesting. There are some guys out there. I mean, Bakhtiari is a longtime tackle, but there's a lot of interest in the NFL right now as a guy because of his ability to play at a high level for a long time and because you don't need him for a full season. There's a lot of teams that are going to kick the tires on a guy like that. I don't know that he's the guy that you move in to tackle, but maybe he's a guy that you move to tackle so that Howard can get moved inside. Whatever it takes to get the protection that you need has to be priority 1 right now at this point in the season.
So I got one more thing on this. I don't know if you got something.
Brian,
another, let's go.
So I don't know if you guys saw like the Chris Sims videos kind of floating around this week, and he mentioned, the Slowik system. There was 2 points that he made. One was that in the Shanahan system, I should say, the center calls the protections as opposed to the quarterback. So that's a big gripe that a lot of fans have. I mean, I don't know that's something you can change in the middle of the season, but it is kind of a disjointed measure. Like, I guess it's supposed to help make the quarterback's life easier, but I think CJ has shown us that he can handle something like that. I guess we're kind of assuming or guessing at that point. But the issue with that is you're trusting your O-line to call the right protection and you just totally delegate to him. Whereas if you're the quarterback, you are in control. You know what you called. So now if you are worried about, a pressure coming from a certain area or this guy messing up, you can at least anticipate things a little bit better. And then the other part of that, too, was it's blanking my mind. What, do you remember the other part of what Chris Sims meant?
Well, he was all about the pre-snap. And,
well, the protections. It was slide protection, which is essentially zone versus man protection. And he said, we are a slide protection team in this scheme. And I'm sure you guys saw it too. Za'Darius Smith with the Lions, who didn't even play in the game, was interviewed on the post-game set. And they asked him about, oh, we saw you coach up on the sidelines. What'd you do? He said, hey, just listen to the calls. And he said, basically, after he told them, if they say Larry or Ricky, that means they're going to slide to the left, slide to the right. It's not hard to understand an L or an R. Mm-hmm. And so they had a distinct and decisive advantage up until or up after that point. He said they got four sacks after that, which to me, that tells me.
You could
me,
see him. He was really adamant about what he was talking about on the sideline.
By the way, I will say, like, I haven't really had a glimpse of his personality. I watched that whole interview. That guy is awesome.
Oh, he was great with the Green Bay Packers. When he played some of his best football when Green Bay got him.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there's a lot of people in Green Bay never thought he should have walked out the door.
He's been on the team for not even a week, and he's, like, already a leader on their team.
Yeah. But he's going to help them.
But, yeah, so that slide protection is another concern with this Shanahan passing scheme, the pass protection. So, I mean, is that something – I heard Seth Payne mention this before. You know, I guess one way to counter that is the O-line's supposed to have dummy calls to kind of throw them off. So maybe we can have solace in the fact that Patterson was in his first start and maybe it was simply dumbed down and we didn't want to get too advanced.
Yeah, but he started at center last year.
He did.
That's true. Yeah. I'm trying to make excuses here.
I mean, I know this is a different segment now, but I'm stressing that. Like, if our like, because obviously it can't be that so simplistic for every team that runs this Shanahan Kubiak West Coast offense. Otherwise, it would never work. So if we're running that in week 10 to where Za'Darius Smith, who's not even on the field, is like, hey, Larry means left, Ricky means right. If it's that simple, that's depressing, honestly, that our coaching staff
it's
made it so easy
dummied it down
for anyone
to level,
pick
yeah.
up. Yeah, that's, man, that's ridiculous.
But then the other part of that, too, is Sim said, like, basically, you know, if they know it's slide protection, like, teams have figured out Slowik, essentially, like, they'll overload one side, and they know that we'll slide the protection that way,
and then they
just bring the blitz on the other side. Like, how many times have we seen the backside blitzer come untouched with that exact scenario?
Yep, just butt naked coming at you going, now what the hell is CJ going to do? And he's running for his life, spinning around, losing yards, and potentially losing the ball. It's a scary proposition. You hope that it's not dummied down, that it's that simplistic to figure out.
Yeah.
But veteran linemen know exactly what they're looking for. And like your point, Brian, Patterson, yes, he played center last year, but he's still relatively young in the grand scheme of things to be the guy that you're going to rely on at this point, along with CJ. They're both young.
Yeah, but something had to have changed because last year the problem was run blocking. It wasn't pass blocking. Other than the first two games where CJ got sacked seven times in the first two games last year. But after that, the bigger problem on the offensive line last year was they couldn't run block. The pass blocking was not a major issue. And Patterson was the sitter. The guy, as we all know from the Sims clip, he's the one calling protection. So yeah. I don't know if it was just the late addition into the starting lineup. I mean, even though he would have had a full practice, we've got to assume, maybe not because of the concussion. But, yeah, for it to be that simple that someone on the sidelines is picking it up is
and,
bad luck.
And we're taking him for his word. We don't know if that really happened that way, but it sure as hell looked like it did. So
yeah, that's – I mean, and legitimately, when you watched the game, you knew that he was passionately using the iPad and also getting into their ear and going in great detail as to what they should be doing. And at that point, I was curious, like, are they going to be more effective? And lo and behold, in the second half, they were a much different defensive line. And they still continue to stop the run as well, which they do all season anyway. So it gave them an advantage for sure. But that's a second half adjustment too, and that's an adjustment that we're not willing to make sometimes.
Which evidently don't exist is what I'm hearing from the coaches.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with a short segment still with Garrett, and then we're going to take you all the way till 6 o'clock. So stay right where you are. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. And before we go to the break, I want to tell you about my good friends at Vanderford Air. Go to VanderfordAir.com right now and check out all the ways they can help you. They can do a complete repipe job on your house. They can put a humidifying system in your air conditioning units, or they can do what you always normally need to do in Houston, Texas. Keep your AC units up to snuff and fix them when something goes wrong. That means everything from putting in a totally new system to just fixing a part that's going to need work and you're going to need to replace. They're fantastic because they're a service company that gives you backups and guarantees all across the way. It starts when you call them at 281-557-COOL. That's 281-557-COOL. I highly recommend you put that in your phone. When you call them within 24 hours, they're going to be out to see you. It's guaranteed. They're not going to wait for days on end until you go to the back of the line, until everybody else is serviced. No, within 24 hours of you calling them, they'll be at your house to diagnose what you got going on. And when they diagnose it, that means they're going to put it in writing. Not these companies that are just there to tell you verbally what they're going to do. Do the job so it's running, so at least you get cool air in the house, and then not be anywhere near being able to be found and be able to have them back up what's done if something goes wrong. At Vandiford, it's the exact opposite. Everything's in writing, from the part that's going to need to be replaced to what it would cost to replace the system. And it stands pat in writing for you to choose which one you want to do. And when you choose, it's backed up 100% satisfaction guarantee or your money back. That also goes with the work that their employees are going to do when they're on the job, the part that they're installing or the system that they're putting in place, and the temperature that it achieves, so that everything is exactly up to snuff and you are 100% satisfied. If you're not, you get your money back. That's why I speak for them. That's why I'm telling you to lock it in your phone. VandifordAir.com shows you all the different ways they can help. But if you need an AC company now, 281-557-COOL is the number you should always have in your phone. You never know when you're going to need it, but when you do, you need them now. You need them fast, and you need them to back up the work with 100% satisfaction guaranteed. That's what they do at Vandiford Air. 281-557-COOL.
ESPN 97.5.
Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
Our man from Blessing or Stressing, Garrett Williams, is still with us hanging out. We appreciate him greatly as he's hanging out with Jeremy, covering some Cougs basketball with my Brian McDonald and myself. We take you and your ever-loving Cougs. Hopefully they get a win tonight. We're taking it until 6 o'clock. We were talking about...
Thank you, Paulie.
We were talking about the biggest disappointment that you have with the Texans through 10 games in the season. And you know, I said offensive line, and we had variations of, you know, between the coaching with Brian and Garrett. We were talking about all the different ways that, you know, it just seems like this team, for as good as they look on paper, have had maybe the shortcomings we didn't expect at the start of the year. And I think one of the other shortcomings that I see is the fact that from a wide receiver core that we were so excited about at the start of the season, like we were so excited about the potential to have this dominant wide receiver core, I think Dalton Schultz has been a massive disappointment to me, especially since you locked him up for multiple years at good money. I think that Tank Dell, to me, has been a guy that has been underused while you were trying to get Diggs comfortable, and then Diggs got hurt. And now when you look at him, because Nico's been out too, the one thing he doesn't really handle well is a lot of press coverage and a lot of bumps to get him off of his route when he starts from the line of scrimmage. And now you hope with Nico back that it gets better. But I would say that the receiving core, specifically as it relates to those things, and especially for me, a guy like Dalton Schultz, who doesn't seem to like he has a whole lot of want to a lot of times, that's been massively disappointing to me.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I mean, you know, we all in the offseason were saying, oh, we're going to have 3 1,000-yard receivers, CJ's going to throw for 5,000 yards, and, you know, it's far from what's going on right now. But I would agree with that, and I would take it a step further or something similar is the tight end group. I mean, I think we haven't talked about it enough, but the injury to Brevin Jordan has proven to be massive, or at least we hope so. Maybe that's a reason why we've struggled. But to your point, Dalton Schultz, like, I know we had an injury early on in the season, so I was kind of chalking it up to that, but it just seems like he's running at half speed. Like, maybe he's just not fast, but like, it just seems like lackadaisical. And, you know, it could just be an optical illusion, like a trick.
Oh, you see a lot of business decisions.
an optical illusion. He looks like the slowest man
in the league
right now.
I'm trying to give benefit of the doubt, you know.
We talked about this. I see a lot of business decisions being made where after the
alligator
catch.
Alligator arms. There's a lot of alligator arms.
And even if he does catch the ball, now he's just trying to get to the ground as safely as possible instead of getting extra yards that you just don't expect out of a guy that's been a really good receiving tight end in an offense that he should be excelling at.
How many, like, 5-yard out routes have we seen where, like, the ball's thrown to him, looks like he's going slow, and just, like, sticks a hand out, and you're like, one, you could have ran faster, it feels like. Two, you could have put in both hands out. Or even, like, when he makes
something.
And three, if you get your hand on it where it land, the nose of the ball hits you in the palm of the hand, there has to be a little bit more effort involved in trying to secure that catch.
But then you think back, so I'm, like, wondering, like, was he that different last year, or is he the same guy? Like, it feels like he's different, but, like, I still don't know. Like, I almost need to go back and watch him or watch the highlights last year. But I would just say, yes, the tight end group as a whole. Brevin being hurt is a big piece, but we had high hopes for Kate Stover. Now he's thrust into trying to be something that he may not be ready to be. So, you know, Schultz is like a tweener too. Like, at the very least, I would much rather have a brick for hands, terrible route running tight end who is a 6'7" force that can block. So, I mean, but right now we have none. We have neither. So, like, you have a tweener who's supposed to be like a receiving tight end, and we're not even getting that. So, like, the tight end group as a whole has been a major disappointment.
And go back and look at the film, too. At least in the Tennessee game at the end of the year when you needed it, he went in and stuck his nose in a couple of times. And he, that's what I'm saying.
The catch of the year.
The catch to save the season.
That's what I'm talking about. The business decisions he's making this year are totally different than the effort he was putting forth a year ago. Right.
I mean, to that theory, he got paid. I mean, and this is kind of along the same lines of what you guys are talking about, although this one isn't this guy's fault because he just got hurt. But I think one of my biggest disappointments from what I was expecting before the season started, I guess really before training camp began, is I thought Christian Harris was going to have a Pro Bowl type season, maybe even All Pro, be thought of as one of the best linebackers in the league. And we got the news of the calf injury, but we thought, okay, he's going to be on the pup or whatever, 4 games, he'll be back, and just he's not back. And now the report for, I believe it was Jonathan Alexander, is that he's going to be back after the bye in week 15. And it almost feels like a Kyle Tucker situation with his shin, because we haven't really gotten any updates, and yet he just keeps staying out with the calf injury that happened in late July, or the very first part of August.
Yeah, I said Houston's just been absolutely scorned by the fact that they get one diagnosis that turns into a catastrophic misread in both Kyle Tucker and Christian Harris. You're right. I mean, look, go back to what we saw in the playoff game when he had the pick six. Go back and look at how D'Amico and they were on the same page. And you could tell this is the perfect coach and the perfect system for him to really just come onto the scene and explode next season. We haven't seen him all year.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's a mystery, too. Like, I don't know what y'all or any of us have heard, but like, you suspect that the injury was like something like he shouldn't have been doing. Like, it must have been like basketball or doing some kind of box jump or something. It's a very mysterious
injury. Just weird that in training camp it was at least the fact that they were like, hey, we're concerned about this to the point where we don't want to lose him for the season or have this linger, so we're going to sit him down right away and make sure we don't push him too fast. Then he doesn't even get through pre-practice stretching and jogging, and he re-injures it.
Yeah,
and now here we are, and we still haven't seen him play all season.
Yeah, so he had to severely re-injured it, or you totally misdiagnosed it to begin with. But this is kind of making me think of like another disappointment I've had, honestly, is the way the Texans media, they've handled media, like D'Amico Ryan specifically. The injuries is case in point. Like, he's taken this Belichickian approach. I don't know if he's always been like that, but that's kind of, you know, tough to deal with as a fan. You don't really get the answers you want.
Yeah, he is not going to give you anything, but it's a far cry from the Astros, who are going to do exactly what you said, which is tell you that it's blue.
Straight up lie to your face.
That's true.
They'll tell you it's blue when it's absolutely bright red, and they're going to expect you to believe it. So, Garrett, we really appreciate you stepping in as Jeremy stepped out. B-Mac and I'll take you the rest of the way. We're going to take a break here and then get into a whole lot more. We're talking NFL. Which last place team in the league has the brightest future going forward? We'll get into a little of that as we get into a lot more before we get out here at 6 p.m. on the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, back to wrap up the final half hour or so of the show. Brian McDonald and myself taking it till 6 p.m. Jeremy had to skip out a little early today. I asked a question before the break, and it's an interesting one that we'd love to hear from you as well, 713-780-3776. Which last place team do we see, Brian, that we think has the brightest future going forward as it gets into next season? I mean, of the teams that you have to choose from, you get the Patriots, the Browns, Jags, Raiders, Giants, Bears, Panthers, Seahawks. Some interesting teams, because at one point they looked like playoff teams, but because of their divisions, they've fallen to the back end of those. But how are you looking at last place teams and their potential for turnaround success?
Yeah, so when you look at it, I mean, the Texans were obviously in this place a couple of years ago, and in their case, they got both of these things. But to me, you have to look at, do they have their coach of the future? Do they have their quarterback future in place? And are they guys you feel really good about? And that, to me, that of the eight options, that kind of narrows it down to two for me. And that would be the Seahawks. I do believe in Mike McDonald. We've seen him be a guy that's shut down the Shanahan Kubiak style offenses. He's been a good mind, and they're in a tough division. Started off the season pretty hot at 4-2, lost a couple in a row. DK Metcalf's been out, so you give him at least a partial excuse for that. But I like what I've seen from Mike McDonald. And the other team is the Patriots, and even though I don't really believe in Jerod Mayo, I do really like Drake May. I think once they actually get him some weapons, because right now he's stuck with a bunch of wide receiver threes and fours. He doesn't have a one or even two, really. So once they actually have some weapons around him, I really think he could take another step forward. So my lean would be Patriots, and probably at one, the team I have the most confidence in of the last place teams, and then Seahawks after that.
See, I don't believe in Geno Smith, and you guys know that. And so that's why that's hard for me to go that direction, simply because of the fact that I agree with you on the head coach. I believe that McDonald's the guy, and I think he's really good. He's an up-and-coming young coach. He's going to be there for a while. He's going to have success. But I just don't believe in Geno. And so when I look at that, it's like, okay, if they don't have one or the other, how quickly can they get it? Because in Chicago, you got Caleb Williams, but you have to get rid of Eberflus, and you have to change everything that goes with it, and you still have a lot of weapons. So at least if Caleb can play, the chances are that you can turn that around rather quickly. In the case of, like, the Panthers, Bryce Young, they're probably going to have to stick with a while longer, and I just don't see that working out for them.
Yeah, they're 2-3 years away from turning it around.
Giants are interesting because they're saying they're benching Daniel Jones. He's played his last game as a Giant. Now, if they stay in last place, they have the potential for drafting high enough to get a quarterback, if you believe there's a quarterback in this draft that could make them better pretty quickly, because otherwise I'm with you. I mean, the Browns for me are out of it. The Jags for me, I never believed in Trevor Lawrence. The Raiders, I think that they're a mess, and even if they get Shadur, I'm not sold on that being the answer, and Pierce as their coach. I think the Patriots are the answer for me as well, simply because of what I've seen of Drake May from the minute he took the field against the Texans. It's not the guy they were talking about in training camp that didn't have a strong arm, that didn't have the ability to make throws. I've seen him make throws, and I've seen him make plays with his legs. And I've seen him at a point where he can handle the moment when the moment gets upon them, when they need some things to happen, to where I believe that you have the quarterback. If he's not the coach, there's plenty of coaches you can find that would love an opportunity to have that guy at behind center, to where I think the Patriots are the answer for me as well.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that coach is Mike Vrabel, who's still sitting out there. I don't know if Jerod Mayo would be one and done, because it seems like his ties with the Patriots ownership there, Robert Kraft, go really deep. So unless it's just extremely toxic behind the scenes, which we have gotten some hints of, but unless it's something like that and they have a meeting at the end of the year where they just cannot come together, I don't think it's going to be a one and done for Jerod Mayo. But if Mike Vrabel takes that job, we saw what he did with a reclamation project at quarterback with Ryan Tannehill. He's obviously a defensive guy, but I think he and the coaching staff he would bring in could take the Patriots and Drake May to another level. You're not wrong in Geno Smith. I mean, there's definitely an argument that the Bears should be two, not the Seahawks. I just believe in Mike McDonald, and I don't think they're going to be necessarily tied into Geno for a long time, and I do like their weapons. I mean,
but then how do you replace them? Because I was going to say to you, and you're kind of leading me into it, okay, let's just take out, for long-term success, starting with quarterback and coach, let's look at overall rosters. Who has the best young rosters that can help you turn this thing around quickly? Because for me, I look at it and say, Chicago still has a
probably
ton.
Chicago.
They still have a ton of weapons all over the place. Even if Keenan Allen is washed and over the hill, DJ Moore isn't, right? And you know, they've
got... he struggled recently, but I still believe in him.
Kmet is still a decent tight end.
He's pretty good, yeah.
They got some defensive weapons. Seahawks have defensive weapons, and they've got two receivers in DK Metcalf to leading the way, where they've got the potential to be really good there. I think that from the roster perspective, those are the two teams that I would then elevate, would be the Bears and the Seahawks, to get into your conversation about Seattle, because the Panthers aren't there yet. The Giants aren't there yet, with the exception of Neighbors and Thibodeau.
Well, and Tyrone Tracy's been pretty good recently, but he's a fifth-round pick, and you never know if these teams stick with running backs drafted that low.
Browns, no matter how much talent they have, you are stuck in Laden with Deshaun Watson situation.
Chubb's an old running back. Jerry Judy's not the guy. They don't have the pieces.
Jaguars, same way. I don't believe in Trevor Lawrence, and no matter who the coach is, you're kind of...
I do like Brian Thomas Jr., though.
No, Brian Thomas Jr. is
They've got
but
one really good piece.
All the other money that they've spent, and then they try to quickly, like Christian Kirk was the money they spent right away, thinking this guy's going to be a huge impact. Then they were trying to trade him to Pittsburgh till he got hurt, and he's hurt and he's out for the year. I look at the situations and say the Bears should still be a win very soon mode, because I think they have almost all the pieces in place if they get the right coaching staff. And from a Seattle perspective, if you're right and they can replace Geno, they have enough going for them where they could be in the mix next year.
Yeah, they probably, I mean, I guess Chicago would be a very, very close second, but I would say they have the best offensive talent outside of quarterback of this group. I mean, it's kind of equal in that for Chicago, Keenan Allen looks washed, and for Seattle, Taylor Lockett, if he's not washed already, he's really close to the end. So you already eliminate those two guys off the end, that off the top. That's kind of equal. But then when you look at the rest of their pieces, I mean, whether it be DJ Moore and Rome Odunze or DK Metcalf and Jackson Smith and Jigba, I like both of those pieces, and they both have pretty good running backs, although I would give the Seahawks a slight edge with Kenneth Walker.
They got some more
over
depth
over
too,
DeAndre Swift, especially with Zach Charbonnet also behind him. So I do like, I think I like Seattle's offensive talent outside of quarterback the best amongst this group. So it really comes down to, can you get out of the Geno Smith contract? And I haven't looked up the details recently, but
it was a short term deal.
Yeah, it was like a 3-year deal. Yeah. So I can't imagine it's just completely a situation where they can't work around it. So I really like the future. I mean, to bring this all back to where we started, I really like the future of the Patriots because of Drake May. And then after that, you got to say Seahawks in Chicago is 2-3, I think.
Yeah, I think from a Patriots standpoint, you just need more players around the quarterback.
Yeah, because they're just receiving room. So I like, I do like DeMario Douglas. Pop Douglas is a pretty good wide receiver. But again, on a good offensive team, he's your third receiver. Mm-hmm. He's not a one or a two. They drafted Jalen Polk out of Washington. Again, I think he's best case of two long term, but he's not been that way this season. So they've got to get him some more help. But I think Drake May has shown that he can do quite a bit with not a whole lot, which is kind of similar to what we thought about, or at least we thought about early on with CJ. Obviously, Nico Collins has turned out to be better than that. But there's a little bit of similarity there, and I like what I've seen of Drake May.
No, I do too. And you know, like I said, everybody was kind of criticizing, oh, the third-string quarterback's got a better arm. Oh, he doesn't seem to be picking up coverages. He can't really put the ball where it needs to be yet. He needs time. They thought that he might sit behind Jacoby Brissett for a good portion of this season. The minute he took the field against the Texans, yeah, he took some lumps, but it looked like he was tough enough to stay in there, and he also made some plays, and he made some throws, and we saw them. And he's continued to do that to where if you're in New England, you got to believe, hey, even if we got the second best quarterback in this draft, because Jaden Daniels looks fantastic, we were taking a guy that might be a project kind of a couple years down the road quarterback that is already showing in year one that he looks like he could be a long-term solution for you and a franchise-type guy. That's a huge win for the Patriots. Now you just got to put a lot of talent around him because I don't think they have that much. You mentioned the wide receivers. I think that you have to look at the long-term stability of their offensive line. You lost some defensive players. You traded away some defensive players like Judon. You have to replace those guys too to go with the Christian Gonzalez's and the guys that you already have. I think that there's room for them to grow, but I think they got to draft really well.
Yeah, I don't think they're a team that can get there next year. Like, they can't get to where the Texans were last year as a 10-win team next year. I think they, as you mentioned, the pieces around the quarterback, there's too much there to do in one offseason. Unless they hit on everything, there's always that possibility. Sure. But obviously that's not super realistic. So I don't think they get to where the Texans were last year this next season in 2025. But if the Patriots, you know, make the right moves, they draft well, I don't see any reason why they couldn't be challenging for the playoffs in 2026.
See, because here's where it kind of ties it all and puts a bow on it. But if you want to talk about, like we've talked about in the past, if you take the quarterback, take Drake May, put him on any of these other teams and tell me that they wouldn't be a playoff caliber team, Drake May on the Bears, I think they're a playoff team. Drake May on the Seahawks, I think they're a playoff team.
Yeah, well, this is not a last place team, so he wasn't eligible to be in this conversation, but you could kind of make that case with what we've seen with Denver and Bo Nix. I mean, Denver, yeah. I mean, their defense is fantastic, but they obviously, I mean, Audric Estime, a pretty decent rookie running back, but they don't have a lot of talent on offense. Cortland Sutton's probably should be a two in the league. He's not a one. And Bo Nix has played really well.
Yes.
And they're right now, if the playoffs started this week, the Broncos would be in the playoffs. So you could kind of make that case where Drake May has played as well or maybe even a little bit better than Bo Nix. And Bo Nix, with a bad offensive group around him, has the Broncos in a playoff spot right now.
Is Caleb Williams the worst quarterback of the first-round picks
in
that draft?
Well, Michael Penix hasn't played, so.
Well, aside from the guys that have played.
But of the guys who have played, yeah, I mean, I've liked Bo Nix more. I've liked Drake May more, and I've obviously liked Jaden Daniels more.
You got to give Sean Payton credit because Bo Nix was the guy he wanted.
Yeah.
And everybody's like,
Well, it fell to him. Like, he was the last of the group. So.
But a lot of people thought Bo Nix shouldn't have been a first-round pick.
True.
And so for him to
but I get what you're saying.
Not only to be a first-round pick, but to be starting and have that team in the mix for a playoff spot, that's impressive. Sean Payton was the right guy.
He was really good on the road last week against arguably the top defense in the league.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at that. He would have got a game ball yesterday had they won.
They were playing really well all game.
He played well enough to do that.
Yeah, you're right. So, all right. So that was just a little fun experiment we got for you. We got car wreck of the day coming up next. We still have plenty to get to, so stay right where you are. We're going to get to that and a whole lot more after I tell you about the good folks from the fact that Stella Rosa wines are so fantastic, and they're here for you, available at your local retailer, because we know that there's always viewing parties going on, whether you're going to one or throwing a party yourself. You always serve the greatest food. You serve the pizza and the wings and the chips and the dips and all the different things that make the food just right. But sometimes do you put the same kind of thought into the alcohol? Because you can serve the beer and the hard liquor, but give your guests a third alternative. Serve some Stella Rosa wines because they're refreshing, because they're served chilled, because they go with anything, literally anything that you're serving, because there's so many different varieties to choose from. And all the different varieties use all natural fruits along with the right amount of spice that makes it just perfect as a combination with whatever you're serving. They're fantastic, and it's so convenient and easy to get to that even if you're going to somebody else's out. Stop by the grocery store on your way there. Pick up a couple bottles. Let them give them to your host. They're going to be happy. They'll chill them and serve them, and you're going to be a hero for bringing one of the best beverages that you can bring. They're perfectly with the perfect amount of alcohol. You don't have to pace yourself because they do it kind of for you, and it's a great taste along the way. Check them out today. Grab yourself some Stella Rosa wines at your local retailer or liquor store, and please celebrate responsibly.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Give me your bone, you prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
It's that time of the day when we get into the car wrecks and see what you have to say about who might be the car wreck of the day. Brian, I'll start. I don't know if you saw this last night or not.
I saw the clip, yeah.
Eric Spoelstra.
He had about a couple minutes.
Yeah, you not only think that a guy that, you know, is always known as Miami's always a really headsy team. They're really smart. They're really good with their coaching. Spoelstra not only did not anticipate a lob up to with 1.7 seconds left in the game, but after the lob was executed for a slam dunk by Jalen Duren that tied the game, Spoelstra immediately got onto the court, blew a tantrum, and called a timeout. The only problem was he didn't have a timeout left.
You never go full Chris Webber.
Detroit made the free throw. That's the difference in the game.
And there's more.
And then on top of that, he tried to put Kevin Love in the game for a baseball pass so that they could get the game-winning shot off and didn't realize with the technical means you don't get the ball.
Yeah, it was not his ball, and then Kevin Love went back to the sideline. There was one point in there. Obviously, he was really mad, like you said, at the first part. But once Kevin Love kind of got sent back and he realized, oops, I blundered again, you could see him chuckling at himself like, man, I look like a total idiot right now. So that was not a good couple of minutes there for Eric Spoelstra.
He was grabbing for a Snickers and a Southwest Airlines voucher to get the hell out of Dodge because that was embarrassing. You got one?
Yeah, I don't know if you heard this story, but after the, I guess you could say feel-good moment, although I didn't really care, but after the feel-good moment of Bronny getting to play with LeBron on opening night, and I believe they also did that in Cleveland as well, Bronny's getting sent down to the G League, but the story that we read today, or that I read today, was he's in the G League, but he's not going to be taking commercial flights to go on the road games. He's only apparently going to play the home games for the G League, so this sideshow that's been about everything but actual basketball continues to be about everything other than actual basketball. Because if Bronny has any chance to develop and actually be a legit NBA player that's not just there because of nepotism, he needs to play all the games.
If you remember, too, that was one of the sticking points. Whoever drafts him, he's not going to be a G League player. He needs to be a G League.
Yeah, if you want, look, I know LeBron, I'm sure as a father, LeBron's obviously got his motives here. But if he wants Bronny to be a player, he's got to continue to develop. He obviously missed a lot of time because of the medical problems. He needs time on the court to develop, and Apparently, he's not going to get it because he's not going to take the road trips.
All right, what's winning? I got Spoelstra.
Yeah, Spoelstra's got to win this.
Spoelstra's got to win that one. Better days are ahead, hopefully, for you, Eric. All right, we appreciate you. BMAC, appreciate you doing double duty. Jeremy's out back again tomorrow. We'll be back tomorrow as well. But coming up next, we've got national programming. Then 7:30, the Mike Elko Show. And at 9 o'clock, Hall of Fame. 10 o'clock, Comicast with our good friend Michael. For Brian, I'm Joel. Have a great night, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow on the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.